This podcast is brought to you by Purposefully Different Productions and is proudly sponsored by Little Dish, makers of delicious fresh meals for kids that are an absolute lifesaver on busy days. I love these meals because they are different to other kids' meals out there. They include a variety of ingredients, lots of textures, and are made with little taste buds in mind. Before we get started on today's episode, here's a word from our friend Giovanna Fletcher.
At Little Dish, we've spent years perfecting delicious, healthy, fresh meals guaranteed to be eaten by kids. Except when you sprinkle cheese on top instead of letting them do it, or if the Little Dish is served on the red plate or the yellow plate or the blue plate, or when you talk over them, or when they can't wear their Ranger antlers because it's summer and they're in the loft, or on Mondays or on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and potentially even Sundays. Good luck and Godspeed. Little Dish. Healthy food kids love. Find us in the chilled aisle.
Hello and welcome back to How to Feed with me, Charlotte Sterling-Reed, the parenting podcast that brings you reassurance, confidence and practical advice on feeding your baby, toddler and your whole family. On today's episode, I'm joined by someone who has truly helped to reshape how we think about plant-based eating, and that is Ella Mills, the founder of Deliciously Ella. You might know Ella from her best-selling cookbooks, her inspiring wellness app, or the delicious plant-based products that now fill so many of our supermarket shelves. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking to Ella about her wellness business and how she stayed true to her mission in a really confusing world of health. I'll also ask Ella to share her tips on plant-based living for families, and particularly how to navigate this with young children. We'll also talk to Ella about her own experience of raising two little ones and juggling that work-life balance and all the trials and tribulations that go along with that. I'm so happy to have Ella on the podcast with me. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, honestly, it's such a pleasure. I'm like such a mega fan of yours. I know I've said this before, but I was so kind of, grateful for all the advice that you share, because bringing up children and learning to feed them is no easy feat. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. I actually have to say thank you for all the little shout outs you've given me on your podcast. And I'll talk about that in a bit, actually. But I honestly screen recorded one of them and sent them to my mum, because my mum absolutely loves your recipes. I was like, look what she said about me, mum. She was so chuffed. So yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. But actually, before we start as well, I want to ask you one thing that you've got to clear up for the listeners.
Yeah.
You are not Ella's Kitchen.
No.
Please clear this up, because I cannot tell you how many people think you are.
Yes, no. We've even had like sometimes Ella's Kitchen complaints, for example,
love
come
it.
Through to us. And we're like, oh, actually, that's one thing we haven't done. But no, Deliciously Ella, totally separate to Ella's Kitchen. Yes, just share a first name, but nothing to do with each other.
Yeah. It's so funny. Honestly, when a lot of the media stuff came out recently about pouches, so many parents came to me, and even my dad was like, oh, and because I think I said I was interviewing you, and he was like, oh, are you going to talk about, you know, the pouches? I'm like, no, that's not the same, Ella. It's so funny. But anyway, it must be something you have to deal with quite a lot. But for those people who don't know who you are, who haven't necessarily followed your journey, can you just talk a little bit about where Deliciously Ella came from? And, you know, how long ago was it now that you started? It's amazing what you've created.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I can't quite believe it, to be honest. I find it very surreal. So it's been a long time now, which again, I can't believe. I started it back in 2012.
Okay.
The year before that, 2011, I got very ill, and that was really what kickstarted everything. So I spent basically the best part of a year in and out of hospitals, seeing neurologists, endocrinologists, gastroenterologists, having MRIs, swallowing cameras. Yeah, colonoscopies, endoscopies, like you name it, I did it basically. And it was, I was then diagnosed with a condition that affected the function of my autonomic nervous system. Mm-hmm. And essentially, like all of these things, like regulating your heart rate, digestive system, my immune system, all these things that should be working, you know, automatically and happening in the background, were totally non-medical speak, like haywire, completely dysfunctional. So when I stood up, my heart rate would be 180, 190 immediately. You either feel like you're going to black out or you can black out. I had very bad chronic fatigue. I was sleeping up to 18 hours a day. I had awful brain fog, pain. I looked more pregnant then than I did when I was about 7 months pregnant with my daughter. so many problems. And the problem was that the condition, which is called postural tachycardia syndrome, was very poorly understood. Mm. There were only, I think at this point, two doctors in the country that specialized in it. Mm. And there were no medications for it. They're all repurposed from other conditions. So they worked well for some patients and did really next to nothing for others. And unfortunately, I sat in the next to nothing camp. Yeah. So I was 21. I was on about 25 different medications a day. I tried beta blockers, steroids, all sorts of things. And they didn't work. And I hit complete rock bottom with my physical health. I mean, I couldn't really do anything, but also with my mental health. And when I reached rock bottom, it's when I started to see, you know, ask the question, I guess, is there anything else I can do to support myself? And I'm very conscious in 2025, the world looks very, very different. You know, whether you open your podcast app, Netflix, the mainstream media, whatever it is, there's a lot of conversation around the link between, and obviously you're so involved in this, the link between what we eat and our health. But back in 2012, no one was talking about it. And I turned to Google, as you shouldn't do, and I don't recommend, but we all do. And I started reading stories of people all over the world, different sexes, ages, all sorts of different locations, all different types of challenges with their health. But there was this common thread of people turning towards essentially like a very natural diet, moving away from ultra-processed food, prioritizing their sleep, their stress levels, their exercise, and a deeply nutritious whole food diet. And having amazing success with it. And I kind of thought, well, that makes sense, isn't it? What you put in your body would affect your body. And, you know, I was struggling so much with basic things like energy, for example, with the chronic fatigue. And I thought, well, look, I don't really have a huge amount to lose. And the more I read up, the more I was like, well, it makes sense. Like, you need all these different vitamins and minerals for energy production, for example. And I don't think I'm eating enough of them. So let's give this a go. But I couldn't cook. I didn't like vegetables. Two kind of pretty obvious obstacles, very tricky. And although I'm sure there's lots of parents nodding along, oh, don't like vegetables. And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to teach myself to cook. And the thing that I need to do is, this isn't a diet. This isn't a 6-week plan. This is a lifestyle change. And I want this to last. And if it's going to last, it has to be enjoyable. Like, I believe so strongly that any habit shift has to feel sustainable. It has to feel doable within your life, and it has to be delicious. Like, it's got to be enjoyable or else it will not last. And so I set about teaching myself to cook.
Love it.
But I never thought it would be anything other than like a personal project to see if it would help. And 2 years after I started the blog, and I started it as a blog because I'm an all or nothing person. I had to hold myself accountable. So I'd had 120 million hits.
That's insane.
And then, like 18 months later, I released my first book, and it was Amazon's best-selling book in any category that year. It became the fastest-selling debut cookbook ever. Like, the whole thing was just so unexpected, completely mad. And kind of fast forward, over a decade later, I started the business on the back of that with my husband. We've sold over 100 million food products. Like, the whole thing's been mad. We've got our own factory. We've got this amazing team. We're the fastest selling snack brand in the UK right now.
It's mad. Just mad. I love it. It's incredible.
7 more cookbooks, but also 2 children, which obviously brought me to your
work. Which
was
the most challenging? That's the question. The kids or the business?
I would actually say the business.
Okay, got you.
Yeah. Although the children were not easy. But and definitely 2 small children, and they're only 14 months apart. And a business during COVID was
hard.
Yes, super hard.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it is incredible listening to you. And I genuinely feel quite awed sitting next to you here, because what you have done has been incredible. It's just such an amazing feat that you've created. I want to ask, like, obviously now, like you said, things change a lot. And how have you been able to like stay true to what you wanted to set out to do when you kind of developed your business now? Because there's so much pressure, there's so much competition, there's so much noise, you know, there's so many conflicting things going on. And I think anyone struggles with that. But how have you managed to do that as a business owner who's always doing, I guess, always trying to really do the right thing amongst it all?
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. I think, to be honest, there's bits, probably the majority of it's almost easier now than it was when I started.
Okay.
Because so it's 2015 that my first book came out. So that was that January. And that's what really kind of changed the game and the opportunities. And when the book came out and Delicious Yellow was just suddenly absolutely everywhere. Yeah. I mean, I was 23 and kind of overnight was on like every radio show, you know, all the daytime TV, press, and was just such a deer in headlights. I had no idea what was going on. But obviously, you know, opportunities don't grow on trees. Yeah. Like you just got to take them. And that was really, really clear. And I was suddenly approached by all these companies, you know, would you license the brand? Would you do this? Would you do that? And I really didn't want to. Mm. I felt changing my diet had changed my life. And I felt quite evangelical is probably the best way to say it, about the kind of sanctity of that mission and of getting people cooking. And I think having spent my whole life thinking, I don't like these sorts of foods, you know, I'd started cooking just like simple, natural, plant-based meals and thinking, this is actually quite easy and actually it's delicious. And why aren't we doing more of this? Like 99% of the UK know they should eat their five a day, but about one in five adults, one in 10 teenagers manages to do it. Like, I want to make this easier. I want to open it up for people. And I felt so on this, this deep passion for that mission. And I didn't want to give the brand to anyone else. And then I met my husband at the same time and he had a job that he hated. And I was looking at this and I love the brand. I love the community. I love the mission. But my interest isn't in the numbers. It's not like core,
doing the bit behind the scenes necessarily.
It's not the kind of core part of the structural bit of a business, which is integral. Like it's great to have a popular brand, but if you don't have a good business plan, it's not going to succeed. And it was so clear that together we could do something huge with this. And we didn't need to license the brand. We could do it ourselves. So we knew each other 6 weeks. We'd already moved in together. Got a dog. And he quit his job so that we could build the business.
I love it. In 6 weeks.
Completely
You must have been like, you know, love at first sight, quite literally.
Do you know what? Having said, I would never believe in that. That's such nonsense. It was. Yeah. It really was. But we're over 10 years in now. So we're like, okay,
it was the right decision.
It was the right decision. But we set about really trying to build the business. And I think, you know, I had been so struck when I changed my diet, when I started turning over the back of packets of things and what was in it. Like, I don't think anyone thinks sweets are healthy, but there were, which is fine. Like, that's actually so much less my concern with the way that we eat. Whereas there were so many things that I were buying, be it bread, be it cereal, and I was turning over the back of packs and I just read all the marketing claims on the front and I was thinking, wait a second, like, why are there three emulsifiers in here? Why are there all these different additives and stabilizers and flavorings? Why aren't we flavoring it with food? And I had this, lots of people do at the beginning of business journeys, this like naive optimism of like, we can do it differently. We're not going to add, which no one was calling it then, but as we call it today, ultra processed foods. Let's see. And we always used to talk between us, Matthew and I, like, this is a giant science experiment. Can we scale a company and truly scale it and have it be 100% natural? Is that even possible? And it was so hard to start with. Like, we'd go and talk to manufacturers and we'd say, we've got this great brand, we've got this airtime, people are talking about the brand, there's such an amazing opportunity, the supermarkets want it. And they just didn't want to make it with no flavorings or no emulsifiers.
Was it that they couldn't or they didn't?
I think it was a combination of the two, because obviously several years on, it can be done. And we've seen that. And there was one product, for example, that we were looking at. We spoke to a manufacturer and they said it's not possible. And then 3 years later, they came to us and were like, no, we think we can do it now.
I love it.
So I think it was, it's just much more expensive. Like, to flavor food with food
is
much more expensive than flavorings, which is mad, as you said. But it's, and also you have this uniformity. And I think, again, like, so many of our calories now come from ultra processed foods. And obviously it's so extraordinarily high when it comes to our children. And it does create this uniformity. Like, if you take a pesto, if you flavor a pesto with flavoring, it's going to taste the same every single time it comes off the line. Of course, and if you flavor it with basil, just like when we make it at home, even though you think you're following the same recipe, it's not the same every single time. Always, you know, just it ebbs and
natural
flows.
Natural variations.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and, you know, and that's not very efficient, essentially, to not have uniformity. And so we had, it was really difficult to start with. And we definitely always had people say, oh, well, you just add a little bit of this, you add a little bit of that, and it'll be fine. And I was so, again, kind of evangelical. We will not do that. We'll never bend. So that was really hard, but obviously the world's changed so much since then. And now actually, like, that's what people are desperate for. And so it's, I feel like we're in this amazing position where we've spent the last 10 years or so kind of building a brand where we stand for that. And suddenly there's this public awareness of it. Yeah. There's a stat that came out a few months ago showing almost 13 million consumers in the UK wanted to change their habits to shift away from ultra processed foods, which, as we said, we didn't even have a name for these things 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think we've gone from people thinking that we were probably completely mad to actually feeling like we're kind of in the right place, which is exciting. Although obviously there's just the food system is so broken in this country, and there's so much that has to change. So it's,
I guess you were kind of front runners for a lot of what we're seeing now. Like there is a lot more of that. And, you know, I know supermarkets are often pushing companies to improve what they're offering and to have healthier options and to, you know, there's so much of that now, but I guess you were doing it before they were even asking for it.
Yeah, when most people thought we were just mad.
Yeah, they were like, these guys.
Make your life easier. It'll be quicker. It'll be cheaper. Just do it like that. Whack it in. No one minds. And they didn't. You know, I think as a general rule, most consumers didn't mind.
Didn't even think about it.
Exactly. But that's a huge shift.
So much more awareness. And do you think that's a good thing that there's a lot more awareness now? I know that there's like pros and cons, of course. And obviously, you know, what you talk about on your podcast, which is amazing, by the way, if anyone wants to listen to it, it's called The Wellness Scoop. What you guys talk about on there is this, the misinformation. So obviously there's part of it, which is great because there's more access, knowledge, availability, and supermarkets asking for this stuff. But you also have a hell of a lot of miscommunication as well.
Yeah, I find kind of where we're at now really frustrating, and I'm sure you do too, for quite similar reasons, which is that I think, not to like idealize any point in time, but if we took like 4 or 5 years ago, I think people were becoming more aware of what they were eating, more aware of the importance of diet, but the world didn't feel so noisy. And I think the algorithm shift that TikTok kind of ushered in terms of how social media is now, I mean, there was a stat that Rhea and I were talking about on the Wellness Scoop a few weeks ago, and it was saying, you know, it's almost 98% of information shared on social media now when it comes to nutrition advice is not aligned with public health information. Now, whether public health information could be stronger, I know you talk about this a lot, is one thing. But essentially, the vast majority of information that people are digesting is either misleading or incorrect. It's also so noisy. It's so, you know, do this one thing and your whole life will change.
Yeah,
it's so conflicting.
Promises,
it's so dogmatic. It's so this one camp or another. And that's not how people's lives are, you know, and particularly obviously again with what you do, like parents are so busy and they're juggling such an extraordinary number of responsibilities. I think most parents feel deeply overwhelmed. And so trying to make changes is so hard and it's made so much harder by all the contradictory information and the fear mongering, all the rest of it. But coupled with the fact that the food landscape again is so difficult and like obviously, you know, I really want to feed my children well and I make a big effort to cook for them. Easier said than done. But you're always walking past shops and they're like, well, why can't I have a lollipop? And I'm like, because we don't eat lollipops every day. And they're like, but I had one at the birthday party. And it's like, I know, but you can't have one today. But it's everywhere. It's and so consistently so saying no, it's so hard. And they're like, well, my friend does this. It's like, and there are different roles in different families. And I don't know. So I think it's just a minefield, isn't it?
It's such a minefield. And it's really hard for parents to navigate, even if you are trying to do the right thing. You know, there's a whole group of the population who perhaps aren't so aware necessarily. And then you've got a whole group who are aware. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the people who listen to this podcast will be. But actually, it's so hard to navigate. And again, there is that conflicting, you know, you shouldn't restrict them, but actually, obviously don't let them have a lollipop every day. Well, how do you restrict the, you know,
well, that's the big question, isn't it? Exactly. Is how do you find a like really healthy balance for yourself as much as your family, where you are enjoying the birthday parties and the cake and not creating a complex or this good and bad and all the rest of it. But when the food environment is what it is, it's like, no, we don't have that every single day, but it is everywhere and it's exposed them every single day. So explaining why you don't have it every single day, it's really, really,
it's
really,
really
hard.
And I think even, you know, for someone like myself, who's a professional in this field, I'm still trying to work out those conversations that I have with my kids about it. You know, Rafi's old enough now, I have full-on conversations with him. I remember actually on Ree's podcast saying to her, he once came home from he'd been at like a sports club, came home and was like, Mum, why can't I have any normal food in my lunchbox? Absolutely broke my heart. And I remember saying to him, Raph, what is normal? And he's like, well, packets of crisps, you know, everyone else has crisps and, you know, chocolate bars. And I was like, okay, well, and then we had like a discussion about, well, what would be like a compromise so that we could add something in that he did feel was more, let's say, normal food. It's just devastating because, yeah, it's not what the majority of people necessarily are doing. So it's a really hard one to navigate.
Exactly. And you want to, I find it really, really challenging. And you want to give them healthy food and you want to make sure they've got their five a day and their 30 different pots a week and all the rest of it, take all the satisfying boxes. But you also want them to feel part of their peers. Mm. And I do, I find it really difficult. And like, again, we, you know, there's a lot of conversation about processed meats in the media at the moment. And I find it really challenging. You look and you see with children, like the top three meats that are consumed, you know, sausages, sausage rolls and ham, you know, three of the top five are things that the World Health Organization would class as possible carcinogens and not something we should be eating in abundance. And I find this balance really difficult of saying we shouldn't have lots of these foods, but not making people feel guilty when that's the norm. And how do you find that balance? But equally, I think we've also got to this point where it's like the food environment is so odd that confronting the realities of actually the fact that it's so much of what we eat really isn't very good for us. And I'm not saying that having it in moderation every now and again, that's not where the problem sits. The problem sits in the fact that over half of our calories, adults and children, come from ultra-processed foods. And so these aren't things we're eating in moderation. Yeah. And that's the challenge.
Yeah.
And I think that's the message that I've always found difficult to get across from people, is it's not about saying never eat these foods, but it is, we need more broccoli, we need more lentils, and how do we get people to want to eat those foods?
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, I feel that message is very hard to put out in our world, in what we do, because I think people do take it as judgment on their parenting. And I always really struggle with that, because I never want any parent to feel bad or shamed, because it is so hard being a parent. And also, we're living in a world and an environment where actually those foods are so normal, so readily available, so cheap, so easy to access. So it makes complete sense why a lot of the time those are the foods that people opt for.
Totally. And then I think also, when you look at the way that so much information is conveyed now, it is through social media or it is through clickbaity headlines.
Yeah,
completely. And as a result, that nuance is really difficult to get across, which again is not where we were a few years ago, but that shift I think we've seen in algorithms makes it really, really difficult to ever get nuance, which is like, don't worry if you eat those things on occasion, but it's important that you know the truth. And
exactly.
And that's you've got to get
the facts out there at the same time.
Totally.
So,
but it's not conducive to a 4-second clip.
Yeah, completely.
And I think that's the problem. I think in this world of like, deeply dogmatic, quite controversial, very black and white thinking.
Hooks and headlines.
It's really, really challenging.
No, completely agree. One thing I wanted to ask you, which I actually ask, I've been asking a lot of people, is do you feel like when you became a parent, I mean, obviously you've talked a lot about your, you know, the, your food brand and your kind of ethos around food. Do you feel like when you became a parent, did your, you know, idea and concept of healthy eating or your idea about food evolve?
For sure.
Really?
I think for a few different reasons. I think probably on a personal level, in the way that I cook and my husband and I eat, is like, ultimately, we were really busy before the kids building the business, so we weren't like swimming in time. But obviously, suddenly, the small amount of time that you have is suddenly like, feels like 1 second. And so I think in terms of like batch cooking and being super organized, that felt like it took on a completely different meaning for us to eat well. And then I think also I had two really different experiences with my children. You know, the first one, one of them like basically didn't eat till she was almost two.
Really?
And which was so stressful. She just, she categorically refused to be weaned, as in, so it was forced self-weaning, which I wouldn't have chosen, because I was so terrified about choking. It was like my one, and still is my one, like big parenting fear. I've done so many first aid courses. So afraid of her. But she, and as a result, like, didn't really get in any calories. And yeah, basically barely ate till she was almost two. Now eats like a horse. And that I found really difficult, because all the advice was keep offering, don't pressure. That's really hard to do for over a year when they're quite little and you're like, I don't think you're eating enough.
And they're really determined,
so determined, and you do, again, don't want to create a complex. Other one ate like a horse, but is now much pickier. And again, and they've like, one of them will love a certain food and the other one will hate it. And again, I've just found that I think you learn, you just cannot bring any judgment into how people feed their children, because children dictate a lot of the rules. Yeah. And I think this whole idea of like you offer their they choose is brilliant, but actually living with that's really hard.
Yeah, it's really hard in the moment. Yeah.
It's really hard. And yeah, the time pressure and what other people are doing, to your point, your conversation with your son with their lunchbox, like that all becomes really nuanced, really complicated. You know, it's luck of how do their friends eat, their family eat, you know, is it in line with what you want to do? And that's all out of all of our hands. Yeah. And so I think it's, you know, and explaining it all to children is really, really hard.
Yeah, completely.
So I think it's, yeah, it's really challenging.
It's really tricky. Honestly, I think a lot of parents will really appreciate like you sharing that, because they'll probably be sitting there being like, oh my gosh, this is my experience. But do you feel, it sounds like, first of all, you had two very different eaters, which
polar
is
opposites.
Exactly what I had as well. Two polar opposites. But then it also sounds like there was a lot of evolving of their own eating as well. So what would, I guess, what would be your message to parents who maybe are like in the thick of that right now? Because I think that would really maybe help some people.
I think... And look, I took all my learnings from you and all the other people I was watching and following. And it was this like sit it out, which is so hard to do. So, so hard to do. But I think it was that like keep offering and in time.
In time, yeah.
It will switch. I did find, again, this is so much easier said than done. The more we eat together.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that really helpful. Yeah. A, it's way less frustrating because when you've made something that you're eating and enjoying, you know, if two even, if four of you are eating and enjoying, that feels like a big win. And I found them like cooking things to expose them to new flavors and then they refuse it point blank.
Yeah.
But you don't, it's not really adult friendly. That felt really wasteful and really frustrating, and you did feel that pressure kind of building a little bit. Whereas, and also their willingness to try things if we're eating it is off the charts, off the scale, so much better. So I found that really helpful. But again, with busy work lives,
the practicality
of that is, and again, they're getting a little bit older, they're nearly five, nearly six, and again, it's a bit easier because they can eat a bit later, so if, you know, it's easier to eat together sometimes, so half the week, say. So again, that changes, but when they're like two and three, that was a lovely idea. And in COVID, we did it more, but it's post-COVID, two and three.
Really tricky. Just,
the premise was there, the reality wasn't. And it was really, really frustrating, but everything said, like, you know, really wanted them to love food and have a positive relationship with food, and everything I got was like, don't put pressure on them, because if you keep putting pressure on them, it will create this like stress around mealtimes for them, and it won't necessarily. But I found my daughter who wanted to do everything herself, she's a deeply independent person, like craves autonomy, which again, like such a mirror, I'm the same. So I'm like, force her to do one thing when I refuse to not have autonomy. Once she could feed herself, actually feed herself, which again was more like two. As in really coordination properly take food and put it in her mouth. Then it changed completely because she could eat a full meal basically. Whereas again, when they're like 14 months or whatever it was, you know, they could eat bits more, but it's the coordination to eat like a full bowl of food just wasn't there.
Yeah. And do you think that your like slight kind of fear of the choking had an impact on that? Because
I'm sure it did. And
because that is one of parents' biggest you know, concerns. I really do feel like what you're saying, like this fear of choking, the little one not eating, the differences in the two kids, the lack of putting the pressure on the eating together, these are all so going to be so familiar for lots of families.
Yeah, exactly. And the more people you speak to, exactly, people are like, it's so normal. But I remember like I'd done, you know, kind of bump and baby type, you know, NCT class, and all the mums were like, oh my gosh, you just cannot believe how much my son's eating. He's had three bowls of porridge. And my nephew was a very similar age to my daughter and was the same. And I was like, she's had one spoon, if that.
Yeah.
And that is so hard to not feel like you're doing a bad job or there's something wrong. But yeah, it kind of ebbs and flows.
Exactly that.
And they take turns on who's a great eater and who's not.
Yes, they so do. Mine do as well. Still now they take turns. And I feel like, you know, the natural variation in appetites is so underrated. I think that we don't realise actually kids are very intuitive. And sometimes we're sitting there thinking, but we feel like you need to eat more. But actually they evidently don't sometimes.
Totally.
You know?
And they do. They have different meals they love. Like one of them's such a lunch person. And the amount she can eat at lunch is super impressive. But she's not really a dinner person. And the other one will eat like a horse at dinner. But like breakfast, you know, trying to get breakfast before we leave for school. Again, it's hard, and it's just like accepting it now, which is like, it's probably half a piece of toast and a few bits of apple. And if she's done that, that's a thumbs up. She doesn't like breakfast.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of have to say, like, fair enough.
That was what Ada was exactly like that. And even now, like, my parents came round today to look after the kids while I came here. And my mum was, like, lumping porridge in a bowl for her. And I'm thinking, she's never going to eat that amount.
Exactly.
I give her the smallest amount and I put it down for her. And most of the time she will eat that and only that.
Yeah,
and
but as you said, really it's a little
small, bit. It's a really small bowl. And she's always been like that. She didn't eat breakfast till she was about 18 months of age.
Yeah.
She just was not interested. And I had to really reevaluate because my son, he is the biggest breakfast eater. Oh my God, he would wolf down bowls and bowls of porridge. So when Ada just wouldn't eat, I had to really reassess and think she doesn't want it at that time. And I have to learn that that's her appetite. And she still eats well and she does eat breakfast now. But yeah, it took a long time. It took a year and a half.
It is. And I think it's just so difficult. And I found it much more difficult when they were little. Now that they're that little bit older, I do find it much easier because A, you can talk to them. And B, you can now see their patterns. And as I said,
exactly. You learn them.
She's a humongous dinner. So who cares if she has a small breakfast? We're golden. And again, and I can see that. That's really normal. Like loads of adults are like that.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas... When they're little, it's really stressful because I think you do feel that weight of responsibility.
To feed them,
To feed them and to help them grow. I don't know. It's not like I don't feel responsible now, but I also feel like they feed back. And you feel like it's a relationship and you're kind of navigating it together. And obviously when you've got a one-year-old, I didn't feel we were navigating it together. I feel like it's all the parent.
It was just so stressful. And I do think we do talk a lot about that bi-directional kind of conversation. But obviously that takes time and it takes time to learn each individual child.
Exactly.
So can I ask a couple of questions? So how, obviously you've kind of got through this, how do you find, like, you know, make healthy eating, I guess, manageable and enjoyable for your family now?
It's just like, I'm a batch cooking obsessive.
Okay.
And I do feel it's like so much. It's like batch cooking so like uncool and like all the rest of it. But gosh, it is just, it is the one thing that helps because the reality is like, you know, after clubs and after school and after work, like, we're all really tired. You know, myself very much included. B, everyone's normally starving. And I do find trying to eat a little bit earlier because otherwise they do end up just wanting so many snacks and then again not being that hungry for dinner. Whereas I find trying to have dinner and then snacks for us often works better. You're just exhausted. And whereas when you get home and you've got stuff and you can add on to it, like chuck some extra stuff in the oven, whatever it is. And there's two things I'll do basically every single week. They love pesto pasta.
Okay.
Like, it's just a win.
Love it.
And again, so I'm always like, okay, well, how can I kind of pimp it
up? Add it more.
I learned that so much from you. Which is, and there's things that they'd never eat. Like, they would never eat rocket. You know, that they're just not going to eat that at the moment. Whereas, like, rocket in pesto is delicious.
They
have no idea that it's there. For
and
example, or like doing the pesto half with cashew nuts or almonds, again, just to get in different fruits and veg.
Changing up the variety,
putting peas in the pesto, putting some tofu in the pesto, for example. Like one of them loves tofu, the other one hates it, but you can chuck some pesto, makes it extra creamy, it's extra nutrition. So it's all these like little bits and pieces. So I'll make a really big pesto that we can eat throughout the week
And
then I'll make pasta in advance as well. And I do peas and edamame in it. And so it's like, it's such a simple meal. You're literally reheating it. It takes 2 minutes, but they're getting, you know, a whole handful, put greens in the spinach, pesto, sorry, spinach, things like that. And so they're getting lots of different green veggies. And I often use like a lentil pasta or something. Yeah. And so they're getting a really nutritious meal, but it's literally taken me 3 minutes.
Yes, to make. Love that.
So I always do that whenever I cook it. I'll make sure I've got, two or three more meals. And then the other thing is I will always do some kind of bean, whether it's like creamy black beans, whether it's some like kind of lentily chili, five bean chili, anything, basically whatever I've got leftovers. And again, that's the kind of thing, like at the moment they don't like mushrooms. They used to like it, currently going through a no mushroom phase, but I'll dice them up so small, like, you know, like you're dicing your onion, you know, just one or two of them, but just for that like support in gut health and diversity, and saute it with the onions and garlic and things like that, or I have a red pepper or leek, and they don't like leeks.
My too don't like leek. I love leek.
Me too. But again, it adds loads of flavour to the base of that sort of thing. And I'll tip in a can of coconut milk, super creamy. So again, I find it a really helpful way. A, you've just got it ready to go. But B, you're getting in things that they wouldn't normally eat. And obviously it's a combination. You don't want to sneakily give them everything. You know, you want to expose them to it. I really, just to be honest, I just don't have the energy to be cooking roasting leeks that they're never going to eat when I'm not going to eat them too. So that's the kind of thing where those sorts of foods, I'll expose them to it when I'm cooking and we're eating it. Yeah. And then if they don't want to eat them, fab, we'll eat them. Great. They're not wasted.
Yeah.
But then to try and get that diversity in, I'll use those.
Building two a variety as like, in.
Exactly. Mm. And it works really, really well.
So would you bulk cook those, for example, like on the weekend or on a day where you can just go, right, I'm going to power these two out and then I've got meals for the rest of the week.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I was home early last night, so we made a big creamy black beans and I had time to do that. And now I've got another two meals.
Love it.
For whenever. Yeah. Or and then I'll pop them in the freezer. Yeah. So basically whenever I'm cooking, I just try and make like bulk. Three portions or three versions of it.
That's
and
what I always say.
I basically never cook anything that we'll only eat once now because it's just so satisfying, isn't it?
Such a good point. And also, because I always do that with like chili or even like a pasta sauce, and you can then use it in so many different ways, you know, on nachos or on jacket potato or with rice or with pasta. You can just change it up so much or turn it into a soup. That's what I did with some the other day. So
totally. And it makes you feel so much better when you get home and you open the fridge and you're like, right, we got that.
Boom.
Whereas when you feel like you're starting from scratch every day, and you're just exhausted. It's a lot. It's asking a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And it's no wonder. But I love that idea. Just a couple of meals. These are what you have. And you add variety within 100%. Those meals. And then when you eat with them, you vary up what you have as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And then obviously some nights we just are so simple. And it's like peanut butter and jam toast. Yeah, but again, it's like, what can we add on top of that?
Exactly.
Is it hummus with carrot sticks? Is it then, you know, putting hemp seeds on the toast? Yeah, it's like all these little things. But I think it's also taking the pressure off. Like when I first started cooking, I felt like I had to, cook something different seven nights a week. I mean, it's like a performance.
Yeah, completely.
And now it's like, okay, let's strip it back. And it's like, what can we do that feels really manageable on a day-to-day basis?
That's such a good tip,
because
honestly.
I think also we all try and be perfect. You know, I think it's when it comes to parenting, like so many of us, we're trying to be perfect parents and no one can be a perfect parent. And also so often you're like so busy trying to do the right thing that they're not present with them.
Yeah,
and you're
completely.
Like, no, I can't play with you because I'm making you a Michelin star meal.
Yeah, because I'm cooking you a three-course dinner here.
Exactly. Which you won't eat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And actually, like, there's so much beauty and like good enough. And I think again, but that's really hard when you're starting out. And I think, almost 6 years into it now, I find that a lot easier.
Love that.
And I look at them and I'm like, you're growing well, you're thriving.
We're all okay.
I feel like we're doing something right.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I honestly think that'll be really good tips and hope for families. So I just want to ask you about plant-based eating or flexitarianism, vegetarianism. What do you think are the misconceptions that we hear about these days? I think, again, like we talked a lot about the noise, but and there is a lot of variation, isn't there, whether you are fully plant-based, flexitarian, vegetarian, pescatarian.
Of course.
What's your kind of take on it? And what do you think are the misconceptions that people hear about, you know, being
plant-based?
I mean,
I think protein obviously is such a huge buzzword, just in the world of health and well-being,
massive at the
nutrition.
Moment,
exactly. And so I think that extends to cooking for families as well. I think people are nervous of that.
Definitely.
For sure. And I think that, but again, I think it's something for all of us to be aware of. I don't think it's something to be worried about. Again, like if we just look at general nutrition, almost nobody is deficient in protein, whereas we are all chronically deficient in fiber. Over 90% of the UK population, so we desperately need to be focusing our effort on eating more fruits and veg. And obviously the beauty of plant-based proteins, like all your beans and legumes and things like that, is that they are both protein and fiber. So I think, you know, however you eat, trying to incorporate more of that is such a win. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing, to your point. It can be all sorts of different approaches to it. But actually just getting people feeling really comfortable with eating those sorts of foods is such a benefit because they're so nutritious. So whether that is, to your point, like a five bean chili or something like that, or maybe like your children love normal bolognese, you know, as in like a traditional bolognese, but actually could you swap 30% of the meat for lentils, for example, and then you're bringing in that plant-based protein, that fiber, super nutritious, but you're keeping it familiar for people. So I think it's just trying to be flexible and tweaks, and again, not feeling like everything has to be all or nothing, which is so the world that we live in, isn't it?
So much, so black and white.
It's so black and white, which is really overwhelming, I think.
Yeah. I have a lot of families who follow me, a lot of families actually, who are either, you know, plant-based or trying to include more plant-based foods in their child's diet, even from a young age. And I know that there's a lot of parents who do kind of worry about doing that. But I, you know, I'm a massive advocate for exactly like you said, there's only benefit to increasing our intake of plants. Most of us need to do that anyway. Do you have any tips for like families who are starting out, whether that be weaning or really young toddlers? You know, and on doing that, on going more towards a plant-based approach or just including more plants in their child's diet, you know, I would obviously be talking a lot about doing it from a young age.
Completely. But what, yeah. And I do say, look, gosh, I've got so much wrong in parenting. Who doesn't? Like there's no one's doing it perfectly, as we said. But I think I find it, I know, I said this to you yesterday, like it's difficult talking about raising children. Like it really is because it's so deeply personal. It's so, so nuanced. Personal, it's so different child to child, as we've obviously both experienced with our children. I'm sure if I had six children, all six would all be completely different. Yeah. No plans to do that though. But it's that thing where there is no right way to do it. But I find it difficult with people will be like, oh, will your, do your children eat that? And I'm like, they do, but that's because that's what they've always known. You know, like we started off eating like lentil coconut curry type dishes, and as I said, like black bean chilies, and that's really normal them. And so we then added on the birthday party food, but we did start with like black beans and you know, things like that. And so it's, they do feel like that's very normal way to eat, and that's a massive advantage to then trying to add on. And I'm really aware of that. So I do think like if you, the earlier you can start it, the better. I do think this whole, and I always think Joe Wicks gets this across so well, this eating together, as we said, easier said than done lots of the time. But I think the more you can do that to have that like normalization and exposure is brilliant.
Yeah.
And then I think it's just like, start with small things. Yes. And, you know, I always come back to, you know, maybe it's silly, but like I called the brand Delicious Cielo because I wanted it to be delicious. And I think sometimes almost with children, we're like, got to get the broccoli in, we've got to get these things in. And I don't know if we're always doing it in the most delicious way.
Like,
I don't like steamed broccoli. I think it's really bland. You know, I don't kind of blame my children for not wanting to eat steamed broccoli. Whereas I do find if I'm making like, I don't know, they love like sort of soy sauce, roasted tofu or fried tofu. So it's really crispy with rice and like a chopped mango and edamame sort of salsa-y thing. Yeah. And then they'll be like hoovering up these foods and then I'll roast broccoli with it. And again, they love soy sauce and they'll have some with that with it. And it's crispy and all the rest of it. But if I steam it, they won't eat it. Or likewise, one of them was in a like, I hate broccoli phase. And actually I found like steaming a little bit and again, blending it into a pesto, added pistachios to it. Obviously again, big trend at the moment. So I had some in the house and it was such a creamy pesto. Yeah. And she hoovered it up and it was so delicious. I hoovered it up too. And I think it's also like just trying to introduce these foods in a way that like you would most want to eat them.
Yeah,
and again, obviously, like you're not going to be dousing a one-year-old's food in soy sauce. But like, again, as they get a little bit older, I do think thinking, okay, let's try and get carrots in. But what's the most delicious way we can get carrots in? Because I think kids' food can be, we can lean on the side of really bland when we're thinking about cooking for our children.
You don't have to,
Exactly. And obviously when they're teeny, and this is your expertise, not mine, but when they're teeny, obviously it's a little bit different. But as they get older, actually, and again, you look at different cultures around the world and what children eat, and it's a huge amount of spice and flavor.
Exactly,
But I think we're probably just a bit bland. And I know you, again, you often talk about it, like when you look at children's menus, they are really lacking in both nutrition and flavor. And so I think it's just trying to, if we want to start introducing these foods, like the yummier they are, probably more likely we are to get them in.
I think a lot of parents are scared of adding the like flavors and the spice. But, you know, in a couple of my last books, especially, I did a lot of cooking with like lemon juice and lime juices. And there's so much flavor. You know, if you're making a stir fry, you can add lime juice and a bit of peanut butter.
And sesame oil. Soy sauce and all these things. And again, you end up with something, maybe even a little bit of like vinegar or something, like rice vinegar. And you end up with something and they love it. And I've often, sometimes I'm quite surprised. We were in Thailand over Christmas and there were things that they were just like, again, hoovering up that would not, you've necessarily have said like children's food, but I tried it. And I was like, this is delicious. Like, no wonder you love it. It tastes amazing. Obviously, if it was super spicy, they're not going to eat that.
Yeah,
well, my children wouldn't eat that. But in some cultures, they would.
Yeah. It's so hard, isn't it? Because I think for a lot of parents, they and I know whenever I share things, often parents do say to me, but how do you get them to eat them? But I think, like, exactly like you said, it is starting early. I've done a whole episode actually for this podcast on familiarization, yeah, because I think that's something that is so lost. Like, if your child doesn't eat something now, it's probably because they're not familiar with it. It's not a normal part of their day to day. But like, the foods that you eat every day are going to be totally different to a foods that another family eats. So your little ones normal, will eat yours. Exactly. It's the norm for them. And I've talked a lot about that in this episode. What's normal for one child is different to another. And when, you know, families mix, that's when you get the kids coming home asking questions like, why do they have that? Or why do they not eat that? Or why can't I have squash, you know, for example.
Exactly.
And it's all
ours
about
is now, why can't
normals?
I have ketchup with my veggie fried rice? And I'm like, oh. And she wants to dip, yeah, everything in ketchup now. And I'm like, oh, we can have ketchup, but do we have to dip
everything in it? Yeah. Oh, God, you mentioned vinegar. Raffy is like that with vinegar. Everything. He'll be like, can I have vinegar on that? What was it he had? Pasta with tomato sauce at a pub that we went to. And he's like, could I get some vinegar? I'm like,
really?
He's obsessed with vinegar. He loves it. So, but you know, they find their things they love. And I just think that is, you know, what it's all about, is that familiarity,
totally,
eating together, keeping
and trying
them
to give
offering
them that autonomy where,
yeah,
like,
exactly,
they are,
yes,
again,
exactly,
as they get a little bit older, like, it does sit in their hands a bit. And I have to say the other thing, and again, like, learn this from lots of other people, not in like, we don't do it in like a horribly strict way, but in a, this is it, what's for dinner. And I always make sure there's things that I know they like,
exactly,
in it. And maybe it's just the rice and avocado, you know, like, maybe it's nothing else in there, but it's not giving them a whole plate of something that's like brand new.
Here's
and scary
beans on toast instead. Yeah,
exactly. But I don't cook different things for them. And I'm not going to then make them toast.
Something else. Who has the time for that anyway? I find that exhausting.
Well, and I really find the waste. I mean, there's so much waste, particularly when when they're little with children. Yeah. And I find the kind of, the waste of it quite uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like if they could always have peanut butter toast, they probably would.
To be
honest.
Yeah. Oh, God. Mine are the same. They peanut butter on crackers or toast.
Exactly.
Always the win.
They weirdly love rice cakes. Like,
oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Like a peanut butter rice cake. Yeah. If they could eat that for dinner, like,
they would
keep choosing that over something vaguely unfamiliar.
Yeah.
And so I think that's not an option in our house. And as I said, not in a really harsh way. I'm never going to send them to bed without anything to eat.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure there's fruit that they like. You know, there's all sorts of things.
That's,
like, But I do try and offer one thing. And that
one
is
meal.
What's for dinner.
And here's your sides.
Totally.
Here's the bits that go with it.
And I know that you'll like some of it and there'll be other things to go. And so I know that you won't be like deeply like deficient.
I
think it's also that thing of like, and again, you always speak so brilliantly about this, but I think it is a really helpful reminder of like, and we're the same as adults. Like, it's for everyone. Yeah. Like, one meal means very little.
Yes, exactly.
And it is like how you eat over the course of a day, a week, a month, a year that matters when it comes to your nutrition and what your body's got enough of or not enough of. And so again, it's like, if you give them something that's vaguely unfamiliar and they do just eat rice, you're good.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, we're all good. No one's in trouble. You don't get a deficiency from one meal. And so I think, again, with people's nervousness to introduce things, I think it is also important to remind yourself of that. Like,
definitely.
There's a whole matrix here. They've eaten all sorts of other things that day, they will tomorrow and the next day and the rest of their life. And so it's okay if they takes a little while to become comfortable with something and they just eat a small amount of it in one go.
Yeah. Honestly, you've answered so many of the questions and things that I say. So it's so great. Obviously, very much aligned. And I love that. And just a couple of more questions left now. But for families who are looking for more plant-based options and more plant-based meals, do you have some go-to ingredients that you always have in your cupboard? And B, a couple of go-to recipes? I know you've mentioned a couple for dinner, but other occasions.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I always have nut butters.
Yeah, same.
As you said, like, I'll put them in like a sauce for noodles for something, or obviously like breakfast, quick breakfast, or
on
porridge,
rice cakes,
of course. But you see, when they're like, can we have jam rice cakes? I'm like, no, we're going to have nut butter with it.
You can have as much
jam as you want.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like trying to mix it up between peanut, almond, cashew, all the rest of it for that diversity. And, you know, that's an easy, quick breakfast. Yeah. We use it for sauces. Lots of tins of like chickpeas or jars of, and beans, lentils, black beans. Again, trying to get that variety in. I'll, in terms of batch cooking, often do things like a hummus. But sometimes I'll use chickpeas and sometimes I'll use butter beans. Again, just trying to get them to have that variety. In their life, which again is easier when you're making a hummus than it is necessarily presenting it to you.
Yeah, of course,
So I always have that. Always have a lot of basil because we eat a lot of pesto.
Yeah, I love basil.
On everything. and then just a mixture of like fruit. I mean, they eat fruit like there's no tomorrow. And I remember again once seeing something when they were little being like, don't always prioritize vegetables over fruit. Children love fruit. There's loads of nutrition in fruit. That's great if they're getting that in, which I find really helpful. Love my freezer. Again, I've always got loads of frozen berries. I've got frozen bananas for smoothies. And then I've got loads of like frozen peas, edamame, that they eat a lot of, which is super, super helpful. And again, I think it's just having all those staples, isn't it? Because then if you've got all of those sorts of things in the house,
you can always whack something together.
Totally. And you, and I think that whacking together is great and should be encouraged, as opposed to feeling like you've got to make a Michelin star meal for your children every night, which is super, super helpful.
But sometimes I think that's confidence as well, isn't it? It's confidence of whacking stuff together. I always do fridge raids because where I'm like, right, what do we need using up? I literally just bang it all on the table and we have a little buffet. And they sometimes end up being like the most fun, but also the most balanced meals that my kids have. So I do that once or twice a week minimum, really.
Yeah, and it's so helpful, And they've got pitters and they can chuck all that sort of stuff in. And then they've got, dips and it's great. And then you're not wasting stuff, which again is really satisfying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Love that. Right. So last question, which is, again, plant-based top tips for helping families who are introducing plant-based meals to their families to make it more manageable, just very generally.
But I mean, we definitely touched on this one, but definitely like always cook once and eat two, three, four times from it so that you're not always starting from scratch. I think be familiar. Like if you want to introduce more plant proteins into your diet, as we said, like make a bolognese that they love, but do a third of it with lentils, for example. It's such a familiar way of doing it where you're getting that in, but in a way that's really gentle. And over time, maybe they start really liking a lentil bolognese sometimes too. But you just do it slowly and gently. And I think trying to dial up the flavor on it and eat together. I think those are the best ways to approach it. Because I think if you're putting down something, as we said, that's just so new to your child, and then you're like, go, I want you to finish that. It's really difficult, but equally you've put a lot of time and effort and money into making it. So you really do want them to. I think that's really normal reaction, isn't it?
Yeah, completely, of course.
So we think just making it as familiar as possible. And or, you know, I often talk about this with adults. Like people would say like, well, I really want to eat more veggie food, but my partner doesn't want to, for example. I'm like, well, flip it. You know, the convention in the UK is meat and two veg. But instead try and make the veg bit the kind of the hero, the bigger part of it.
For sure,
and put the meat, the fish, whatever it is on the side. And so again, it's still familiar. It's still there. You haven't changed everything overnight. But you are just introducing it in a way that's like flavor first. And familiar, which I think just opens people's curiosity to try
definitely.
It.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I love that. And so last question, and then we're going to do a really quick fire round. But your last question is, what is your one tip to parents who are feeding their kids right now and in the thick of it?
Oh, gosh. I think it's just, you know, it just ebbs and flows, doesn't it? It's the same with us and our habits and the way that we look after ourselves. Like life ebbs and flows. And I think sometimes it feels really difficult and then sometimes it feels like you're winning. And there's one thing that I always come back to, which I think is relevant for this, but everything in your life is like, I always have this idea that so many of us, we've got big goals or ambitions, be that with our parenting, be that with our own healthy habits, our careers, whatever it is. And we have this view of where we want to be and where we are today. And there's often a gulf in between the two, and trying to get there is really difficult. You know, you want to cook from scratch more, you want your children to eat more healthily or whatever it is in this case. And I always come back to like, just lose the gulf, like stop thinking that terms and just like think about getting 1% better, 1% closer every day. So like, what's just the one little thing you could do today to get you closer to where you're trying to be? And if you could keep that up every day for a year, which when you're just moving 1% from the goalpost is pretty achievable. You're getting over 300%. You know, you're like, you're smashing it. And I think we all really overestimate what we're going to achieve today or tomorrow or in a week's time. And we underestimate what we're going to do in a year. Yes, and I think if you think about your family's eating habits, the idea that you're actually going to change them all overnight, it's like, it's never going to happen. You're stressed, you're overwhelmed, they'll refuse it. Like the whole thing, you're kind of setting yourself up to fail. Whereas if what you say is like, you know what, I'm working from home on Thursday this week, I've got a little bit more time.
Yeah.
I'm going to cook something that we'll all sit down and eat together. Yeah. And it's going to be a little bit new.
Mm.
What an amazing place to start. Or like, actually, we don't get our 5 a day or our 30 plants a week. So I'm going to make a bit more effort.
Yeah.
I'm going to introduce one new plant every day.
Yeah,
love and that might be putting sunflower seeds in a pesto that my children and I already really like. Or it might be like, okay, with breakfast, we're going to have our peanut butter toast, but I'm going to cut up a piece of fruit with it. It's like, these are really small, manageable small things
exactly.
And just focus on that. But if you did that consistently over time, the way that for you, how you eat, how your children eat, how your family eats, the way you eat is going to look fundamentally very different a year from now. But you've done it in a way that's doable with your busy life.
Yeah.
And I think that's my number one thing.
I love that. Stop having this mighty one tiny thing each day will make a huge difference over a year. Yeah.
Mega. Like you'd really be eating very differently and you will have introduced so many foods and it's so great for your health, for your family's health, but it's manageable. And in a world where we're all really overwhelmed, manageable is the only way, as we like said right at the beginning, like
to do any of it.
For anything to be sustainable, it's got to be enjoyable. And to be enjoyable, it has to be both achievable and delicious when it comes to how we eat.
Yeah.
And I think just strip it back to that.
Yeah. Love it. I honestly think so many parents will benefit from all of your tips and your thoughts on this, and also your reality, like the realism of like it wasn't plain sailing feeding the kids as same with me. So I love that.
It was hard.
Really quick fire round. So number one, what's always in your fridge?
Pasto.
Love it. Love it. Number two, your favorite 10-minute meal?
Ooh, a quick stir fry.
Love
peanut butter noodles.
Love it. And pesto pasta.
Reheated pesto pasta.
Number three, what one food your kids love that has actually quite surprised you?
Tofu. Steamed tofu.
Perfect. Love it.
Even quite plain.
Yeah, Ada sometimes eats it when I'm making it into like little nuggets or something. She'll just eat it raw. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to question, but there we go.
Likewise.
Number four, what does a realistic family mealtime look like in your house? Appreciate that's not quick.
A lot of please sit down. Please get back on your chair.
Yeah.
Don't throw things. Yes. I mean, look, trying to get people to sit down for a meaningful period of time. The one thing, this isn't quite fire, but my husband, his family used to go out for Sunday lunch every week.
Yeah.
And it's really important to him. And when our girls were little, he was like, we're going to start doing it. And we're not bringing screens.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really hard to start with. And actually, I have to say, like over the last 5 years or so, we've gone out to eat as a family in a restaurant every week.
Mm-hmm.
And they are now really good at it and they love it. And that's a great place for introducing new things because it's a fun setting. I mean, I'll bring Uno or I'll bring Polly Pocket. Like it's not like we're no toys, but we do sit down as family and that's been really, really great. But when we're at home, there's so many distractions and things. There's a lot of sit down.
And also I think it's a bit novelty when you're eating out and about sometimes, isn't it, as well. And like you say, I do love that you can explore different things when you're out and about eating with them. And I think parents should try and think of it as more of an opportunity to like what's new that they can have on the side or I can share with
or we're
them.
Sharing.
Yeah,
exactly. And again, as we said, like deliciousness. It's really delicious.
And so
there's loads of things that they'll try that they wouldn't necessarily try at home because it looks and tastes really good.
Yeah. And also at home, I feel like there's always more tantrums and refusals and all of that stuff. So, but honestly, Ella, thank you so much. This has been so helpful. I know parents are going to love it. I'm really, really, really grateful for you to coming. So thank you.
Such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much to Ella for joining me today and sharing her amazing insights and experiences in feeding a family and especially plant-based eating. This conversation is full of so many practical insights for any parent or caregiver raising kids and wanting to explore more of a plant-powered approach to family mealtimes and just how to make healthy meals delicious for the whole family. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do subscribe, share it with a friend, or leave a quick review. It really makes a huge difference. This podcast is brought to you with support from Little Dish, so a huge thank you to them for hosting us in their headquarters as well. And make sure you stay tuned for my next episode. This episode of How to Feed wouldn't have been possible without my sponsors, Little Dish. Their meals are fresh, delicious, and made with ingredients that you would find in your own kitchen, making them a brilliant option for busy days.